This is the real weepy and like tragic part of the story beginning, oh my brothers and only friends.
I'm in for four potential getaway drivers. Go.
No!
But I was told that I could listen to the radio at a reasonable volume.
No!
Excuse me, we have a little bit of a hurry.
Hang on, Voltaire.
It's yet another long series of diversions in an attempt to avoid responsibility.
Hey, everybody. We're back for our 19th podcast, and I really don't have an introduction today because I think we should just jump right into the fray. Basically, we've gotten a ton of inquiries as to when the vidcast will be out. And the sad truth is the vidcast will never be out. And we didn't realize this while filming the vidcast, but we were actually filming our lost episode. And sometimes people, when they're doing, you know, episodes of a show, it takes several seasons for them to lose one. But for us, you know, just our luck, right out of the gate, we filmed our lost episode. And so it will be open sometime circa 2022 by probably some archaeologist or someone digging near Riverside. Looking for dino bones, and they'll probably find it that... Actually, I'm lying to you. We didn't film it. I have a confession to make. When I was out there, all time was devoted to basking in the California sunshine, and no time was devoted to our craft, except for when I went and did an interview for the next issue. So, essentially, we were lazy as hell. And this is my formal apology. Tanner, you have to do your own.
Well, I mean, doesn't it really just keep within, you know, what you would expect from us? I mean, if we'd really delivered one, I mean, it wouldn't have fit as well as just completely botching the whole attempt. I mean, this podcast really is a broken promise.
Yeah, I mean, but it's not to say we're not going to get around to doing one ever. It's just to say that we tried to put way too much on our plates a couple weeks ago, and it just wasn't happening. Instead, we went to Disneyland. That was awesome. And then we went to Laguna Beach, and that was pretty sweet too. So screw your vidcast, man. Just imagine all the fun we had. That's all that really counts anyway. So.
Yeah, hopefully someday there will be a vidcast. And then in 2028, when the special edition DVD, Blu-ray, high-definition Criterion Collection DVD is released, the lost episode will be on it.
By then, we will have converted into some hologram form, and you can actually watch us in your room do the vidcast.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, let's get on with the show. Like I said, this is our 19th episode, and, you know, unconventionally, I'd like to say happy 19th podcast to us. That's a landmark I never thought we'd reach. I was certain we would flounder by episode 2, and somehow,
so that means,
even though they're sporadic, we made it this far. What were you going to say?
So that means we've been doing this for at least 19 weeks, because we've skipped about 20 episodes.
Yeah, I mean, there's been 19 Sundays we've sat down and talked about the most contrived bullshit. And for some reason, people listen to us. So thank you.
So that's at least 5 months of it. That's surprising, actually.
Yeah, we started in September or that. So, but for today's podcast, we have a couple topics in store, and then maybe a surprise one or two, because you've got a whole list, I guess, in front of you. But the first topic that I'd like to talk about is something that I can admit to doing when I was a kid, but I did not quite... I wasn't as into it until I got older, which is comics. And I know you, Tanner, you were an aficionado at an early age.
Mm-hmm.
But comics have really become something of... It goes beyond being just artwork. It's real vivid storytelling now. And I think... Basically, here's what happened. I went to the comic book store, and last year sometime, a comic book came out called Atomica that had caught my attention. And so I started to read that comic, and, you know, it was short. It's only had, I think, 6 books come out of a supposed 12, and who's to say if that that the company that's doing that, I think it's Speakeasy Comics, I think they might have floundered by now, I don't know. But I realized like that there was something more to be said about comics than I remember back in the day reading, you know, those the Marvel comics and stuff. And they weren't that good, to tell you the truth. I wasn't really into them. And they lost me at a certain point. But now I think they're becoming more relevant, and maybe that has something to do with the increased visibility that they have now that they're also being shown in the cinemas. But comic books are really badass. Case in point, I picked up Superman. Oh, what's it called? I think it's called Red Sun, something like that. And it's this alternative universe to the Superman comics that questions what would have happened had Superman not landed in Kansas, but rather what if he would have landed in the breadbasket of the Soviet Union during the 1930s or so. And the whole comic is basically him doing things the Soviet way. Comrade Stalin dies, he takes over, and he begins to write the world. Because of his hearing, he knows when there's an accident that's going to happen, and he creates this perfect society, this utopia, and the citizens stop wearing seatbelts because they know that, you know, Superman will save their life if something is, you know, an accident is to befall them. But meanwhile, in the United States, the U.S. is, just becoming this abysmal state. I think only by the midpoint of the comic book, only 36 of the 50 states are still part of the U.S. The rest of them have converted over to the Soviet way. And Lex Luthor, in the 1960s during this comic book, he's a brilliant scientist, whatever. He marries Lois Lane, and he spends his whole life trying to find a way, just like in the American version, trying to find a way to once he ascends to the presidency, it's just a matter of him basically throwing everything the U.S. has at Superman. Meanwhile, though, Superman is trying to reconcile, you know, the fact that the citizens begin to hate him. They start to believe him to be meddling too much in human affairs. And there is a terrorist group that forms, and it's headed by Batman, which I thought was intriguing. And this kind of leads me to my point with this, because, well, let me just finish. I like Red Sun Rising. I thought it was one of the better comic books I've read. Yeah, there's some weird dialogue in it, but I guess that's to be expected in comics. But I was really impressed with the inclusion of Batman, and of course my favorite superhero, the Green Lantern, who I am upset that he was offed so quickly near the end, because everyone knows the Green Lantern would destroy Superman. Destroy him. I was waiting for you to comment there, Tanner. I wasn't sure if you agreed with me or not. So anyway, yeah. While I was out in California, you also introduced me to those Batman books. And it got me thinking, Batman seems to me to be the most diverse character. He seems to be the most intriguing to me. He's got so many facets to his personality. So many people have taken the figure of Batman and turned him sometimes a complete 180 from what he was in the 60s and 70s graphic novels. And now he's... the fact that they were able to just manipulate him to be a terrorist in communist Russia... who was fighting against Superman. I thought it was really interesting. Maybe first I should ask you, Tanner, give us a brief overview of your history with comics, and then tell us maybe if you agree with me on the Batman observation I'm having.
Well, I've probably been reading comics since maybe 5th or 6th grade, something like that. And I think what Batman sort of represents is the transition that a lot of people make when they're reading comics from a child's activity to an adult activity, because Batman is a far more sophisticated character than most other superheroes were back in the day, because he had a human... he was a human, essentially. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody else was a superhuman. He was a human that highly trained himself to become a superhuman. And therefore, his character allowed writers and stuff to take him farther by concentrating on his more human aspects and the fact that he was flawed, unlike Superman. And yeah. I think what happened was in around 1986 with the famous Watchmen trade paperback by Alan Moore was that people started seeing superheroes as the interesting part about them, not so much their powers, but the fact that the powers are being wielded by real people. And that's what Batman represented, mm-hmm. and that's why comics have gotten so much better now, because they're more focused instead on people going around and blowing things up and punching people in the face and making their heads explode. It's more about, you know, what this means for someone like Batman who have had a tragic past and now is wielding these superhuman-like powers, you know, for what he believes is good, which, you know, it's all about perception. And that's what's so great about comics now is that they're far more sophisticated in subject matter. The only problem is when you go to the comic book store, they're like $3 to $4 a piece.
Exactly.
I mean, what kid can afford that?
When I went to the comic book store this last time, I picked up 3 issues of Atomica because I hadn't gotten them recently. And then this this Superman, it was the entire, you know, the entire graphic novel. It's every issue, you know, put into one paperback. So the total I left spending there for 4 comic books was $29 I spent. It was $2.99 a piece for each Atomica, and then like 19 something.
And that's too much
for Superman. Yeah,
that's too much. I mean, what I've resorted to doing now is just getting graphic novels, which are about $15 to $20 a piece, and they'll collect the whole storyline. So you don't have to wait around, and it seems like a good value at the time. Mm-hmm. I think it's just a way better solution. I would suggest, if people are interested in comics, of course, get everything Alan Moore has ever written. And then I really enjoyed that Batman Hush series. Not Hush Returns, but the first Hush written by Jeff Loeb. And he's also done Batman Long Halloween, which is godlike. Mm-hmm. And those are the two. If anyone's interested in getting back into comics, if they haven't been in comics, reading those.
Now, I'm intrigued by Alan Moore's career because, well, just I'm looking at one specific one, and maybe it was because it was ruined by the film, but, you know, he did League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Yeah,
and
that was
and
ruined
I'm curious,
by the film.
I've never read much of Alan Moore's stuff, tell you the truth. So, I never even read the Watchmen comic. So, you know, I'm just kind of going through the list of what he's written. And that one stands out for me, and I guess that goes to show that even the greatest comic book writers can just Hollywood can lose touch with exactly what is supposed to be going on with superheroes.
What they do is they look at it and they go, "Oh, this is a comic book. Let's make it over the top, like wacky action." And that's not what his writing's about at all. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we should probably move on.
Oh, okay. I was gonna go really quickly with Batman. I just want to say, like, I think right now, currently, his trajectory is, I think he's probably going to go down. I think he's surpassed Superman in terms of how good a comic series can get. Just based on, you know, in the 80s also, you know, Frank Miller did the, was it the Dark Knight Returns, I think it was, where it was Batman age 50, you know, reconciling with the demons of his past and finally saying, you know what, fuck it, I'm going to suit up and fight villains again. And he comes back hardcore and he fights the Joker and all those other guys. But it's such a mature graphic novel. That's the other thing. They're not immature in the least. They do nothing to sell the character short. It's so palpable, these characters. And so anyway, yeah, that's comics. I like it.
I was watching My Own Private Idaho, which is a 1991 movie from Gus Van Zandt about... It's sort of based on a Shakespeare play and about two boys and blah, blah, blah. It's got a... But the big thing was that it has River Phoenix and Keanu Reeves in it. And I was watching that movie and I was just thinking, like, damn, like, how good of an actor River Phoenix was for his age in particular. Mm-hmm. And what he sort of represented. I mean, this movie was perfect because here you've got Keanu Reeves, who is now a big star in Hollywood, and, I mean, everyone agrees, he's terrible. He's one of the worst actors on the planet, but he's a huge star now. And here you have River Phoenix opposite him in this movie, who just blows him out of the water in the movie, and who gives an Oscar-worthy performance. And I was just thinking, if he hadn't died, River Phoenix would probably be the best actor working today. I mean, he was our great hope for acting, and now a lot of people complain about how there's not many good young actors, and it's because River Phoenix died, I think.
Yeah, I noted how good he was. My first introduction to him was in the hit Joe Dante film Explorers back in 1985.
Oh, yes. Great movie.
But I didn't really know him until Stand By Me in 1 year later in 86. And he was incredible. I mean, everyone can agree that Stand By Me is one of the classics of our generation, but certainly of film. It's one of the better of children, you know, having their imagination and going out, you know, going into the forest. Every one of us kids did that.
Yeah, and every kid remembers watching that movie and seeing that dead body, and mm-hmm. that scared the crap out of me.
Oh yeah, because, you know, I lived by a forest almost my whole life, and the prospect of finding a dead body in the woods was never far-fetched.
Absolutely not. It was always possible.
Yeah, I mean, not only was there dead bodies, but Predator might be stalking the woods. That's how real, you know, those forests.
Why can't our worlds be like that again?
I know. At some point you lose, you trade it in, and you realize, to quote Pearl Jam, who is my new favorite band for some reason now, well, not for some reason, they're good, but there's no trade back, so now we can't have that world, sadly. But, in Stand By Me, he was absolutely incredible. And he was in several films after that, but I was too young to like The Mosquito Coast, you know, same year as Stand By Me. I didn't remember him any time between Stand By Me, but then the next time I saw him was Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. He was in the very beginning, but you've got to admit, like, that was one of the standout performances of that entire film.
Yeah.
It was him as young Indy. And him as young Indy, that's when I realized that he had more acting capabilities than anyone. And I was honestly sad when he died, because I also remember, I think it was around 1994, when Interview with the Vampire came out, and they had to put in, what's his name? I can't even think of it.
Brad Pitt?
IMDb. No. Now I have
Tom,
IMDb.
There's Tom Cruise, Brad Pitt, Antonio Banderas.
Christian Slater.
Oh, God, what a horrible replacement.
Yeah, Christian Slater, because he was buds, you know, with River Phoenix. And River Phoenix, though, was reporter.
That would have been so much better.
At the end of... Yeah, wouldn't it have been amazing? But in the end, if you watch the credits for the film, they dedicate, I think, they attributed Interview with the Vampire to... to River Phoenix. So that was like, it was such a sad thing, because I just knew his trajectory as a star was so, he was beyond rising, you know.
I mean, the amount of acting talent he displayed at such a young age. I mean, he was 16 in Stand By Me, and you mm-hmm. could tell that he wasn't just, you know how a lot of kid actors are just sort of acting, they're just getting by. You know, you could tell that his performance was nuanced in that movie.
Yeah.
And that's something that no 16-year-old is accomplishing. And what I was also thinking about was, I mean, Johnny Depp's probably the best actor of that generation working.
Yep.
And it's so bizarre that River Phoenix died outside his club. And it's like his death, like, then propelled Johnny Depp to take his spot at that very moment outside of Johnny Depp's club.
And I think, I'm curious whether or not, if River Phoenix were still alive today, what films have we seen that have come out that he would have taken the role, or would he have been taking all these roles that, like you said, you know, Keanu Reeves, or even Johnny Depp, would River Phoenix been in Knights of the Caribbean, or would he have been way better than that? You know, would he be doing action films right now? Would he be in independent films? Would he be doing like Johnny Depp does, where he just takes scripts based on what he loves? Or, more importantly, and I think you made an error in your introduction to River Phoenix, would he be on caliber with Daniel Day-Lewis? Because he is the greatest actor right now, and no one ever will usurp him as the best. I can't believe you would even...
Unless they fight him. That's the only way.
Yeah, it's like a Highlander thing.
Yeah, they have to behead him. That would be so awesome.
And weather through the electrical storm of his life essence, and then see whether or not they can handle that.
That's another great sketch idea for the Mythical show. An actor having to behead Daniel Day-Lewis for his crown.
what actor would? I think Haley Joel Osment would have to try and do that.
He couldn't even wield the two-handed sword that it would take to cut through Daniel Day-Lewis's stout neck.
What would be hilarious is if in some weird, you know, old man rage, if Sean Connery like reverted back to when he thought he was a McLeod and actually tried to behead Daniel Day-Lewis, thinking in some Alzheimer's fit, you know, that Daniel Day-Lewis actually did have the essence of the Highlander and could somehow grant him everlasting life. And then tragically, of course, Daniel Day-Lewis is just merely beheaded and you know, Connery goes to... But anyway, that's just my own wicked fantasy that I've got.
Okay.
Anyway, so River Phoenix, what do you have to wrap up with him? What do you say about him?
Nothing. That's all I've got.
Because that's all he is, man. He's in the grave. He's done.
The last thing was, I mean, if you're into video games at all, one of the biggest events in video gaming just happened, and that was the sequel. Well, not really a sequel. I mean, it's like the fifth in the series or something. But Elder Scrolls Oblivion was just released for the Xbox 360 and the PC. And it's been getting ridiculous rave reviews. I mean, everyone is... I don't think I've heard a bad thing said about the game yet, really. And I'm checking Metacritic right now for its cumulative review.
In the meantime, the first game that we played was, I remember, it was the summer of 2002, and it was Morrowind, The Elder Scrolls, and Morrowind was a huge letdown, which is kind of why I haven't purchased Oblivion, not to mention I don't really have the time with this issue coming out, but I think Morrowind was probably my biggest letdown for a video game in the history of video games for me, simply because I started off strong, loved it. It was the best video game at the time. But then gameplay became repetitive, monotonous. You basically... There was a storyline that was going on, but you could do all these sub-quests, and I was intrigued by the sub-quests, and then when it came down to do the actual storyline, I didn't give a shit about it anymore, because all it was messenger quests. And so I would go, you know, from Vivek to the north end of the continent to all these places, and yeah, and in its time, it was stunning landscapes. It was the amount of freedom you had in that game was ridiculous. And you could meet vampires and be turned into one, and you could murder citizens in a town, and that could affect every aspect of gameplay in the game. But in the end, it came down to the fact that they didn't have a lasting appeal with the main storyline. So with this game, first off, for you, what are its merits? What things have they done that have corrected the errors of Morrowind? But then after that, tell me also what has gone wrong? Where have they not learned their lesson? And thirdly, this should be the first thing you should tell me, what does Metacritic say?
Okay, Metacritic, they've got a 94. Universal acclaim, easily the highest rated game that I'm even viewing on the site. So,
Damn. Essentially,
people are claiming this is one of the greatest games of all time. Now, I have to say, it is a huge improvement over Morrowind, because, first of all, the game's a lot more accessible. They guide you along a path a little bit better. It's not as open-ended, so you don't get lost and bored really quickly, like with the other game. And the quests are far more interesting. And this, I think this is aided specifically by the fact that now everybody in the game is on a time schedule. So every single NPC in the game follows throughout the day a certain schedule, where they walk to this store, buy something, talk to this person, go to bed. So all the quests then sort of revolve around this time schedule, wherein you'll have to rob somebody, so you'll have to wait till they're asleep or outside of their house doing something. You have to follow a guy as he's on his trip, you know, to see what he's up to, and that sort of thing. I mean, that really gets you involved in the quest, and I mean, it's just a brilliant questing system in that sense. Mm-hmm. However, I mean, I've got a lot of complaints, a lot of nitpicky complaints, but I mean, these are the sort of complaints that take a game from being, you know, a universally acclaimed game to a little bit less than that. You know, not quite there yet. And I still think this series is not quite there yet. And I guess one of the major things is they now have changed it from being able to having to travel everywhere and experiencing the giant landscape they have to where you just teleport everywhere. And that completely shrinks the world. You no longer get a sense of a huge, sprawling world that you're in. It's just a series of little icons and a map that you teleport from. And that, I mean, that really takes away from the immersiveness to me. I mean, one of the best things that I like about World of Warcraft, which I actually like better than this game, is the fact that you travel in World of Warcraft, and you see things as you travel, and the world amazes you as you travel. And that, I think that is one thing that this game is missing. And secondly, there's a lot of really dumb stuff, like the fact that whenever you steal things from somebody's house, you might have killed the person. They're no longer existing on the planet. You go in their house, steal something, and you get busted by the cops for it. Who's there to tell on you? Who's there to say that that's my thing that you just stole? I mean, that takes away from the fun. I should be able to kill somebody and do whatever I want with their house. And there's a lot of little elements like that. But, I mean, the battle system's great, the world's great, the quest system's great. But, okay, now here's my main thing. Because if I was to give this game a score from 1 to 10, I would probably give it an 8, like a 7.5 to an 8. Ooh. And the major thing, the major problem is the world is not a world I want to hang out in. And, I mean, you can't underestimate that.
What is the... Because I honestly don't know... I know the world of Morrowind had unique landscapes, and in the middle of the whole area there was a huge mountain. And so when you got to the mountain areas, it kind of blew, because I wasn't into that. But it had swamps, and it had forest, and caves. What does Oblivion... Is Oblivion just one drab landscape, like, the whole way through? Or is there... Do they try to have a forest area? Do they try to have, you know, the plains? Do they have the desert? What's the landscape like?
I guess, I mean, I was talking with a friend about this, trying to, because he loved the game and was just like, you know, like everyone else, was just obsessed with it. I'm sitting here finding myself playing Warcraft every time over Oblivion. I mean, I never feel like playing Oblivion.
Let's admit it right now. I mean, Warcraft's landscape is so complex and intricate. It's impossible for you to ever be bored with it. You can look at things endlessly.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, their art design is just unbelievable. It's unparalleled in games. But, I mean, Oblivion, it looks beautiful. You go outside and it looks beautiful. It's amazing. But I think the big thing is I feel so lonely in the game. And I
feel no animals?
Here and there. But, I mean, I just feel like I'm this lone person in this huge world. And I just don't want to go there. Like, when I go to a game, I want to feel like a badass, like everyone loves me. You know, like, I don't know, like, I want intrigue and, like... But when I go into Oblivion, I mean, the towns are sort of dark ages where everything's dark and suspicious. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, there's people, but there's not a lot of people, like, in a city. And the outdoors, there's basically nothing, no one, anywhere. I mean, there might be, like, two bandits, but...
See, but that's the thing. You should be encountering, if people are on their own schedules, you should be encountering, like, pilgrims. People going from one city to another to, you know, to relocate. Maybe their time schedule takes them, you know, it's every 20 hours of gameplay they're on the road. But still, they should, you know what I'm saying? Like, you should be encountering random people chopping wood in a forest or, I hate that sense of isolation. And I think I felt that, too, in Morrowind. I think total game size, it was like, what did they say? This one is what, like 4 miles or something like that?
It's
in
huge.
Real distance?
I mean, it's huge.
I think that's what it is. Is like from one end of the planet to the other in this game, I think it's the equivalent of 4 Earth miles, square Earth miles, I think. So it's like a huge game. But if you're in this area and you feel alone, well... You know, half of the fun of being in these massive games is that there could be interaction. Yeah, sometimes there won't be. And sometimes you have to, you know, just plow through the areas of the game that have no inhabitants. But you should always be encountering somebody.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And I mean, it's not even really the outdoor areas as much as just even inside the cities. I just don't feel welcomed. It doesn't feel comfortable for some reason. And I mean, it's difficult to articulate the feeling, but I would be interested in hearing if anyone else has this feeling when they play the game where they just don't feel like playing it because they don't feel comfortable in the world itself. And I was just thinking maybe it's just because I'm so used to how great Warcraft is and making you feel in a unique and dynamic environment that this game just sort of falls flat. But I mean, a lot of these people who are doing these reviews are Warcraft players, and they're not getting this impression. I think it's just the fact that this game world doesn't fit what I like about game worlds.
Right. Well, So in the next game, because obviously, Elder Scrolls will continue on. It's probably in the top five grossing games, I would assume. It's got to be. So, what things would you keep from this one? I assume battle system is going to be one of the things you keep.
Yeah, the battle system I didn't even mention is awesome because you can dodge things and jump around. It's so realistic.
Yeah, and that's so revolutionary to me. It seems as though by including that aspect of the game where if it's based on your stats dictate whether you dodge or not. But it's like, if you gave me full control, even in World of Warcraft, that's the case, And it makes for much more dynamic gameplay when if someone is going to strike a blow towards you, you can parry and then, knock them on their head or whatever, whatever your weapon is. So, or if somebody's shooting a fireball at you from a distance, in real life, I'd be able to jump out of the way in a heartbeat. I would be like, oh shit, there's a fireball coming at me, let me move. And it seems to me that is such a perfect way do you think they've done it perfectly? Do you think that they need to revamp that in the next edition? Or
no, I think
they've done it the perfect way?
I think the battle system's great. I think the questing system's great. I mean, just the look of everything is amazing. But I think they need to stop with the scaling your level to your scaling all monsters to your level, because you can't feel like a badass and just rip through people.
Stupid.
And the armor and like dressing up of your character sucks. There's not, I mean, I'm getting up there in levels, and I haven't gotten any good shit that really makes me feel like a badass yet. I want really sweet-looking armor and stuff, and I don't really have that. I think the big thing is they need to make the world more populated and more diverse. I want to see not empty landscapes. I want to see small villages and, like little homesteads and people doing shit out in the world. And I want to see towns that are far more interesting. I don't want to see a bunch of stone and brick and people inside their shops and, like, five people walking around. I want things happening. I want, like, entertainers on the street. I want some life. I don't want everything to be the Dark Ages,
Yeah.
I want it to be, like, sort of Renaissance Dark Ages mixed. So it's like a world that, I mean, here's what it boils down to. Why would I want to escape into the Dark Ages?
No one does.
I don't want
to. Yeah, no one does.
I don't want to.
See, what would be a good balance would be, if they wanted to strike a balance, they would have, like, maybe two separate type of human civilizations on that continent, and one of them might be in the Dark Ages, and you have to deal with that. But then there's another one that is, like, the Athens of the time,
And yeah, culture, like, culture and stuff, and fun stuff, and yeah, I mean, but it's not, I mean, I'm bashing on the game, but I just feel like somebody has got to offer a dissenting opinion, and I've got one, and it seems like I'm the only person that has voiced one.
Yeah, everyone I've heard from has been giving it nothing but glowing remarks, and I knew there had to be a fault in the game. There has to be a fault in the game, because no game has been created to date that's perfect for me, and so, just to this game as though it's the best game. It's as though no game can triumph over it. I immediately beg to differ. I think, but the fact is it could just be who designs Elder Scrolls. I can't think who does
Bethesda Softworks.
Yeah, Bethesda Software. So with Bethesda, maybe they're gonna just keep topping themselves, and that's fine. But at some point, they're gonna have to realize that there are people like you with a different opinion. This is the same shit we went through with EverQuest, though, and it's like, our voices might never be heard. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good step, but it's not there. So, yeah. But they'll continue.
All right, well, so that's a good. That's your review. So 7.5 to 8 is what you're giving it.
Yeah, I guess it could move up to... Right now it's at a 7.5, but I'm anticipating it moving up to 8 once I get to, like... Because I've been talking to some friends who are farther into the game, and some of the, like, the assassin quests and stuff just sound awesome. So I'm sure the game's going to get better.
Really quickly, before we end this, the core things that made Morrowind so great, and this is something I'm sure that they've incorporated in Oblivion, but the mods, the add-ons that you can download, the user-created ones, you know, you can make one if you want to. Now, couldn't those mods make it so that those redundant and onerous tasks that you have to do in the game, can't it eliminate those? Have you downloaded any mods yet for the game?
Not yet, no.
Okay. Well, maybe there is some hope for the game if you just hang in there, and maybe somebody can create, you know... there's got to be some people... Because that was one of the integral things of Morrowind, was that you could get rid of the stuff you hated by downloading a mod. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these games are always evolving, and that's a good thing, though, because they allow the users to help, you know, help the game evolve. It's not just a designer thing where you're going to have to get an expansion pack. It can just as easily be corrected by a user, so...
I bet my opinion would be a lot different, too, if I wasn't playing Warcraft at the same time, too. If I didn't have a game, and I just jumped into this game, I think it would be a lot more satisfying. But the thing is, this game has to compete with Warcraft. I mean, I have to want to play this game more, and right now, I don't. I want to play Warcraft more every time.
What are you doing in Warcraft?
Beating people in the face! Constantly!
See, here's the thing you didn't realize. Like, True Puss, my character, he's on a vacation right now, okay?
And like a month.
It's been a month, yeah, that's true. But True Puss right now, he's relaxing, he's taking his time, and when he comes back to Warcraft, he'll be so refreshed that there's no way even your level, 40 character could defeat him. You can't defeat him. Okay, so keep punching people in the face, but, you know, after a while, your guy just needs a rest. You need a taper or something.
Yeah, and anyone who wants to join the baddest-ass guild on the Thorium Brotherhood server, start a Horde character in Warcraft.
Is it that good?
We're pretty badass. And Whisper Domitian, Domitian.
And if you just want to have a good time... Whisper True Puss, TruePuss, and we'll just hang out.
Who's never on? You're going to have to send him a mail.
I wonder what my mailbox looks like on there. I bet you I have all kinds of sweet armor in there. Going on with issue 2, Tanner and I are rigorously looking through submissions, and most people, at least in this first round, should be responded to by, like, Wednesday, I think, is when I'll be all done with mine. We've got a ton of stuff to filter through, so everyone has to bear with us, because this is a two-man operation. You know, we get all these other literary journals. Yeah, they might be fledglings like us, but they have, like, a six-man crew filtering through everything, or constantly working on the design issues or whatever. This is just Tanner and I, so give us a goddamn break, okay?
I know, you'll get your issue, too. It might take a couple years, but...
Yeah. We intend on this happening, okay? So, we'll spend our money for you. Don't worry.
And by the way, we're rich. Right. We have $60 in our account.
Shit! Had I known, I would have been going out to the bar this week. Wow. Charge that one to the company account, please. Anyway, I think we're done. Godspeed to all.
Yes, God bless America. You have been listening to This Just In, recorded on Sunday, April 23rd, 2006, and distributed on Monday, April 24th, 2006. For more information, please visit www.the-means.com. Special thanks to Milli Vanilli for providing this somber and forlorn track that properly speaks to the pain that I know we are all feeling in the absence of the much-hyped video podcast. The day we met, girl, I'm gonna miss you.
gonna miss you.